Gray skies are gonna clear up, put on a happy face.
Brush off those clouds and cheer up.
You got it.
Put on a happy
Okay, so I'm here with Andrea Pizer, who is recently the author of Celebutards. Andrea, how are you doing?
I'm just great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. First off, I wanted to ask you, I suppose, the obvious question. I mean, you believe a Celebutard to be a famous person with a grandiose notion of his own importance and contribution to the known universe. Then, well, if that's the case, why bother to give them further attention? Why encourage this sense of importance?
Well, I don't think you can ignore them. They will not be ignored. I think a person to be a Celebutard has an automatic platform. Somebody like a Sean Penn or a Sharon Stone will actually dip into their pockets or their donors' pockets and travel to the Middle East, to other countries, to Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. Sean Penn went to see Hugo Chavez, and where they spread anti-American sentiment. Now, people have asked me, is destroying America a bit overstated? I don't think so. When Sharon Stone goes to the Arab world to find out the real truth, she's on the front page of every newspaper. She's on their nightly news. People think that there is real distrust of America going on here, and they're carrying a message that that this is a country worth hating.
Well, clarify this America-hating, anti-American sentiment. Is it really hatred to question some of the things that go on? I'm sort of confused.
No, I don't think questioning the nation is at all anti-American. I think going to enemies of the country. For example, Sean Penn went to Iran. He sat in a square. He heard thousands upon thousands of people screaming death to America and death to Israel. You'd think they mean what they're saying. I mean, you'd think that there's a little bit of hatred going on. He declared that they didn't mean it. Now, you can't try them as traitors. We are allowed to speak our minds, to give freedom of speech. But I'm saying that they are spreading this notion that there is massive discord in this country that made them rich and famous beyond their wildest imagination.
Well, we're dealing with a sort of third-hand perspective because we're now talking about what Sean Penn saw and what he reported. But it is true that when someone says, oh, I hate this or I hate that, it doesn't necessarily translate into hatred. It could just be frustration with current policy actions.
Well, frustration, hatred. I think when he goes to Hugo Chavez and says, you are the rightfully elected leader of this country, when everybody else in the world has found massive voter fraud going on, isn't he giving aid and cover to regimes that actually, if he lived in those countries, he would not be able to speak his mind?
Well, you deem Alec Baldwin a Celebutard, partly because of the infamous voicemail to his daughter. But I'm wondering if it really is fair, given what you've just discussed in relation to Sean Penn and his political sentiments, to take something that was never intended for the public and put it up there with something that is actually in the public record. I mean, is it really fair to deem someone a Celebutard for their private actions like this?
Well, private actions. He left a voicemail. Any idiot knows that anything you say on a cell phone, anything you email and voicemail, it's out there. He was in the middle of a custody battle. He was threatening his daughter to come over to California and straighten you out. It got into the public eye, and he got furious because of that, too. He blamed others for his own actions. That's also a common thread in Celebutardism. When Barbara Streisand, for example, is caught being really, really stupid, she blames other people for her own stupidity. So in the case of Alec Baldwin, he did something really stupid, or actually dangerous, and he blamed someone else.
Yeah, but if it were not Alec Baldwin, someone could leave that voicemail. It may not have been disseminated out to the media like that. It's just as, for example, you mentioned George Clooney and his anger and fury towards a photographer shooting a picture of him above the men's stalls. You're saying to me that if a photographer came up to you while you were doing your business, that you wouldn't have any particular problem with that? Well, it's out there to be disseminated?
I wish George Clooney would make up his mind. One day he's fighting against the stalkerazzi, as he's called them, as other celebrities have called them. People who stalked, for example, Princess Diana. Of course, the courts found that she was killed not because of the paparazzi, but because of her drunk driver. But anyway, he made a very big deal about that. Could be seen as people could be seen that, seeing it as censorship, whatever. But then he turned around and he decided that I'm going to back off. And that is censorship, and it's okay. Say whatever you want about me. So I wish he'd make up his mind, really.
Well, I mean, he is expressing understandable anger at a photographer shooting a picture of him above the stall. I mean, if someone did that to me, I would probably also be quite upset. I'm sure you would, too. So I'm wondering if it's fair to hold him accountable for that particular understandable reaction and use this in the sort of broader painting of who... he is in relation to all of his other actions.
Well, that was in Australia, first of all. He's giving a picture of the media. Of the media. I love that word, the media. I'm not shooting George Clooney naked. I really don't care. But that was in Australia. He got the thing suppressed. He threatened a lawsuit. And I wish he'd now be quiet. And now he's decided that the media has to be left alone. Which one is it? Are they killing Princess Diana, or are they okay? So which one is it?
But do you believe that a celebrity is entitled to some level of privacy? Is it really fair to constantly... you're living a life of a celebrity. You're having all these photographers, reporters, paparazzi, you name it, invade your particular personal space. So, I mean, understandably, your particular lines in interviews and the like are going to be more subject to scrutiny, and so this makes me wonder whether it's actually fair to attack someone.
What I really love is how somebody likes to take Madonna, for example. Way back when, she was creating things that would attract media attention. She was desperate for media attention. And now that she's a huge star, she's the most controlling person that exists as far as interviews go. So why can they run to me and say, please, pay attention? They do everything, including taking their clothes off in public to get us to write about them, to take their pictures. And then when they reach a point of fame and fortune, it no longer exists. I don't know. I mean, the media, actually, I would say the media is dreadfully controlled by celebrities. I don't think it's as much of a free-for-all as you're suggesting. I think that there are armies of publicists out there who really control the image. So I
certainly agree with you on that. I mean, you make up so many interesting points about Tom Cruise and Michael Moore, certainly. I would never interview them because of these particular controls. But nonetheless, look at what happened to the Christian Bale outburst. This was remixed in a very fun way on YouTube. And suddenly, things do get out. But the question is whether it's entirely fair to... I mean, I understand what you're saying, which is that the media, one needs it to advance in one's career. But simultaneously, is there a particular point when the media should back off? Should they be probing and taking pictures of children and the like and that sort of thing?
Well, I have never done that. I don't go after somebody's children, not without permission. I don't know. Michael Jackson goes out in public with his children in veils. I would say that he's attracting more attention to them than if he had just gone out in public with children with their faces showing. But, I don't personally condone using children, but I think that a lot of celebrities put them out there. Mm. Put them out there to attract attention.
Even if they're like doing their shopping, for example, and the children happen to be along, and then the paparazzi come. I mean, see, this is where we get into why I'm trying to just clarify where you're coming from here.
See, once again, this is a very small thing. I make the point, and I do this in the cases where the celebrity is obnoxious in the control of pointing out that at one point in their career, when they were very young, they would do anything for attention. Now, I have never stalked anyone. Everything I get is from above board sources. So I'm not speaking for myself. I'm talking about the hypocrites, the celebrities who use the media and then have no use for it once they're famous and rich.
I guess, though, the question is whether they can truly be hypocrites if the media is just a part of being a celebrity. And sometimes people are thrust into celebrity, often unexpectedly, something that they do seems to hit, and then they became part of this media system. So I'm wondering if it's entirely fair to call them hypocrites if the reality of the media system involves this level of control that they almost get thrown into just by nature of being, you know?
Well, I wish you'd give me an example, because I think you're referring to an accidental celebrity. I don't think there are any of those in my book. My book deals with the ones who fame seek and then try to control, or hypocrites who decide that they have a political platform where at one time it was good enough to just look good and perform. I think that when you open your mouth and make a political statement, you're asking to be criticized, and some people just can't take that.
Yeah. Well, Martin Sheen, you quibble with his views on 9/11, but the man has, as you point out, he's openly said he's not going to run for office. He says, I'm an actor, this is what I do for a living. Doesn't he have some right under the First Amendment to espouse what you may view or I may view as nonsense?
I mean, this is a separate
kind of scenario where, I mean, in fact, that quote came from a YouTube video as well. So
he has a right to espouse any kind of nonsense, and I have the right to criticize any amount of nonsense. People don't understand the term of censorship. I'm not censoring him. I'm letting him say whatever he wants, and then I'm coming back with what I think and what a lot of people think.
But if Bloomberg were to appoint you honorary mayor of New York, you'd probably take it, I'm sure. You know, you quibble with him to becoming honorary mayor of Malibu. You'd say that you wouldn't take that particular option if he said, hey, Andrea, we'd like to make you honorary mayor of New York. I mean,
I don't think there's any danger of that happening, so
hypothetically, I mean, you know, he's not running for office, but you're not going to decline an invitation to be honorary mayor. That's what I'm saying here. I'm just wondering how that relates to quibbling him for his political views, which are pretty much on the side. It's on this YouTube scenario, but it's not actually part of the performance or his acting. He is just an actor.
Why does he have to tell me his political views? Why is it not good enough that actors can stick to what they're good at? The minute they open their mouths, they get themselves in trouble, and then they're shocked and appalled that I should turn around and say, you're really stupid.
But you don't have to listen to their political views. You don't have to report on their political views. You can focus in on what they do best, which is acting.
Yes, I could, but isn't that a matter of censorship? I don't know why it's become so popular that we have, you know, people don't vote in this country. They don't know who represents them in government, but they know what Oprah Winfrey thinks. And she actually inarguably has controlled more votes than anyone out there, more than anybody who was elected or appointed to office. Oprah Winfrey, a bright lady, an entertaining lady, but not exactly a scholar. So people are paying more attention to that, to what Madonna thinks, to what Michael Moore thinks, than they are to the people they put in office, or they're just not bothering putting anybody in office. They're learning their views from television.
But is it fair to blame the celebrity for what is essentially something that's endemic to culture and media, what we're talking about here, that this is just the way it is? And not only that, but also, okay, many of these views are primordial, atavistic, very ill-informed. Nevertheless, it does find, it creates a starting point for which people to develop their own particular independent views. And so I'm wondering
I wish that were the case. I don't know that people are doing that. I'm all for free thinking. I'm all for looking at an issue from all sides. I don't think you're getting the whole side, not from Hollywood.
You write that Nancy Pelosi hangs on to the hope that she matters. Well, she is Speaker of the House. She's third in line to the presidency, and it seems to me that this doesn't quite live up to your definition of someone who has a false sense of their importance, because arguably Pelosi does have importance, and even if she will say stupid things from time to time, nevertheless, I'm not sure if this fits in with the broader celebrities culture that we are talking about
Nancy
here.
Nancy Pelosi, who will stop the government in order to attend a wedding, who will go to the Arab world to solve the peace crisis. Israel had to issue a statement saying she does not speak for Israel. She rose to a very high point in government, and sometimes I think she's incredibly stupid.
But you wrote She hangs on to the hope that she matters. I think she does matter,
does
though.
Does she matter to the Mideast? When she puts a shmata on her head and goes into the Arab world and says that she speaks for the Israeli people, well, she doesn't speak for the Israeli government or the Israeli people. I don't think she mattered very much there, but they had to put out a statement clarifying that. She wants to matter far more than what her role is in government.
So you're saying that she only matters in America, but she shouldn't matter to any other country, basically. That's what you meant by that statement.
Well, not in that context, she shouldn't.
You write about Al Sharpton. Knowing I will never in this lifetime agree with anything that comes out of his yap, he likes to poke fun at me during the rare instances I cover his events. Now, do you mean to tell me that there isn't a single thing about Al Sharpton that you could possibly agree with, even if he said, hey, ice cream is fantastic? I mean, I'm pretty sure we could both get behind
that. I think I like ice cream.
Yeah, okay. Well, so you have a passing interest in ice cream, let's say.
Yes.
If she were to say that, though, that is a statement you could agree upon. I'm curious.
Okay.
Are you insistent on this? Adamance that there's nothing you could ever agree in your lifetime with Al Sharpton?
I thought he was onto something when he fought against the use of the N-word and other bad words. We can't even say it anymore.
You can say them on this program.
All right.
We have no censorship here.
Yeah. Okay. But I'd rather not. But I've been conditioned. But when in music, rap music, and so forth, and then so I went to one of his events. But then I heard, unfortunately, that they were just directing their fury at using these nasty words, sexist words, and so forth, against the white-owned music companies. Nothing against the artists who insist on using them. So, you know, we diverged again. We started to agree, and then we had a disagreement over the idea of who you go after to make a change. So I'm sorry, Al Sharpton, he's almost got me going, and then he loses me again.
Wait, so you're saying, and this actually brings to mind what you wrote about Munich, about its moral relativism in your view. I'm wondering if it's acceptable, I mean, why it's acceptable for you to actually go after the artist when the art is almost a separate component. Like, if you or I were to, like, say, write a novel, and we featured all sorts of murderous impulses in it, that doesn't necessarily mean that we are murderous. So why should this matter for Spielberg to be looked at as a
back to Spielberg. Spielberg's movie Munich, I found just appalling. I found it even worse than what some of the reviewers said. He really equated Palestinian terror to Israeli response to it, and he said so in interviews as well to Time magazine and others. And I don't know what happened. I mean, how a person who could make a Schindler's List could go so far into the Hollywood echo chamber of how to solve problems.
But his art alone, I mean, shouldn't this stand separately from what he does as an artist or what he says in interviews? And I can actually get to that Time magazine quote too, but I'm curious if why art should be held up on the same level as, say, an artist's statement of that particular work.
Well, I think it was pretty obvious if you watch the movie, if you've seen it, and you've seen it all the way through, what he was saying. It was so heavy-handed. He's not known as the most subtle director, but the message there was plain and clear that Israel has lost its way, that Israel, in trying to stay alive, has become the bad guys. And I disagree with that wholeheartedly, and I'll never stop saying it.
Yeah. But does this mean that Spielberg is worthless to you, that he's now in the celebutard category for one misstep that you view with Munich?
He's a great disappointment to me. I've always defended Steven Spielberg. Certain critics I know, they don't like his work. They think it's too heavy-handed or whatever. I thought Schindler's List was beautiful. I really enjoyed it. I think E.T. was a great movie. But
it sounds like you're a Spielberg fan. So why tag him a celebutard?
Because
for one thing.
For one thing, it was
for one film.
It was his, at that point, it was his most recent film, and it was how he's trying to be seen. He's as we mentioned, he went out in interviews and he's really slamming Israel, and I don't know why. I think maybe he's been in Hollywood for too long.
Well, I mean, actually, I just want to clarify, because I did dig up that Time magazine interview. You quote Spielberg, of course, a response to response doesn't really solve anything. And this is your example to demonstrate that he's a celebutard. You write in this book that with this particular quote, Spielberg changed the nature of the atrocities in Munich from murder to a response. To what exactly? He never said. But actually, he did explain this, and here's the full quote from the Time interview. "I'm always in favor of Israel responding strongly when it's threatened. At the same time, a response doesn't really solve anything. It just creates a perpetual motion machine. There's been a quagmire of blood for blood for many decades in that region. Where does it end? How can it end?" So he did say what he meant. The response was in response, of course, to
quagmire
Black September.
Quagmire of blood? Let's go back to Munich. Forget about the current day Palestinian conflict, Israeli conflict. We're going back to Munich. I mean, this was a massacre of Israelis by Palestinians. So what response to response? What quagmire is he referring to?
This is referring to Israel responding in retaliation to Munich.
Yeah, as well they should. Yeah. As well they
so
should.
So it's a response to a response, and that response was in relation to the whole cluster.
But what was the initial response? Why was that a response to a response?
Black September was a response. Yeah.
A response to what?
A response to the ongoing fracas going on between...
You think murdering Israelis... I'm sorry, I get very emotional, but murdering Israelis without any... it was not a response. It was a massacre. I cannot call that a response. That's just an obscene word to use in that case.
So you're saying by him calling Black September a response, that is why you view him to be a celebutar?
When did athletes... ask for what were they responding to by murdering athletes? They didn't murder soldiers. They didn't murder government officials. They murdered athletes, for goodness sake. I mean, I don't even know why this is even an issue. I mean, it's so obvious to me.
Okay. Mumia Abu-Jamal, to understand Abu-Jamal's allure, you write, realize that some inmates draw fan clubs of lonely women and confused men who were convinced the imprisoned are wrongly convicted. I'm wondering, though, if that might be an overgeneral description, because some people are interested in this because they're concerned about the way the legal system operates and the falsification of testimony. Is it truly fair to generalize the type of person? I mean, I'm with you. There are probably far too many Free Mumia supporters at any kind of rally I've seen. But nevertheless,
mostly on the West
not everybody
Coast.
Is looking at Mumia as this kind of celebrity. They are probably concerned about the way that he was tried and the like. So I'm not sure if it's entirely fair to draw this generalization about the people who are behind Mumia.
Well, he did have a freewheeling trial. He refused to testify. He refused to show up half the time. And
we got a note. Can you please talk a little quieter?
Sorry. It's just that everybody in here has just been fucking quiet all morning.
You want to go somewhere else?
No, we can continue. We're almost done.
Are you going to be much longer?
We'll be like 10, 15 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Just kidding. We'll talk quieter.
You want to go to my house or something?
We can just finish this here. I'm sure we'll be fine. That's the first time.
I know. Yeah.
So back to the Mumia thing.
All right, I'll try and talk quieter. What were we saying?
Well, about the supporters of Mumia and how some of them are concerned with the falsification of testimony and just the legal system and graft and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't see how falsification of testimony even arrives into the Mumia Abu-Jamal situation. He didn't testify. He barely participated in his own trial. He was a failed radio reporter who was arrested for murder. I don't really know what his case is. I mean, I know what people say. They say a black man can't find justice in America and Free Mumia. But if you really, really look closely at their theories, it's no more detailed than that. I don't think he has a case. I think he's the wrong character to hang a whole movement on, frankly.
Got it. I wanted to talk about Rosie O'Donnell because you include her in this book, but you also acknowledge that you were close buds with her.
Yeah, for
and that
5 minutes.
You felt betrayed by the piece she wrote in The Advocate, in which she wrote, "During my own trial, the smug New York Post columnist Andrea Pizer became my unlikely ally. That's because at 42, I've been a professional entertainer for over 2 decades, and I know how to work a room. I spoke to everyone during breaks. I chewed gum. I was me. I won Andrea over. Martha did not." Now, these are pretty, you know, tough words from her. It seems to me, though, that this incident, which is very personal, may likewise be motivating your your impulse to call her a celebutard. And I'm wondering if it's entirely, you know, noble, I suppose, to not just, you know, hey, this happened. I'm going to let bygones be bygones. She was a jerk to me. I mean, why feed that further? Because it's clear that, you know, she manipulated you. But simultaneously, you know, why not take the high road?
Why not take the high road?
No, well, she doesn't exist in your world.
You know, Rosie O'Donnell, I was with her on a very difficult time in her life. And, I don't know. I'm not friends with her. I'm not friends with any people in these books. And I think that reporters who claim to be friends with them are just being used to begin with. I put that in there because, just to show that I knew her, that this is what happened, that this is how she treats people. But my problem with Rosie O'Donnell is more her 9/11 denial. I mean, she got up there and said that the government brought down the Twin Towers, or brought down 7 World Trade Center. Where does she get this from? This is feeding into this huge movement that says the government is bad, the government is wicked, the government brought down the World Trade Center. I just think she's kind of a loon in a lot of ways. And it's a shame because she's got a very nice personality most of the time.
But I mean, is this part of the media system, or is this just part of the way things are? I mean, all celebrities are not this way. I mean, are there any noble celebrities that you can name here? Because you've dished a lot of dirt in this book, and I'm wondering if you are any celebrities of virtue who actually rise above what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
you don't, when you don't hear this kind of junk out of their mouths, then you don't really think about them. I wrote in a parenthesis that Adam Sandler is not a celebutard. I've never heard anything nasty out of his mouth, and I enjoy his work quite a bit. And I even wrote that I was a Bruce Springsteen fan. I was such a big Bruce Springsteen fan. I used to believe in him. I used to also believe in the Easter Bunny. But, his image is really honed by the Hollywood machine. He's not Joe Lunchbucket. He is just your standard Hollywood leftist. Maybe he lives in New Jersey now, but he's just your standard leftist. I haven't heard anything out of Adam Sandler. Haven't heard anything. If it's not in the book, it means they haven't opened their mouths, or just not yet. Maybe they're in the future edition.
Well, but why not? Besides Adam Sandler, are there specific people who you can say, these are model celebrities, they never get political, they never say anything stupid, they manage to give you the access that you want? I mean, there's got to be someone beyond Adam Sandler, or is it hopelessly incorrigible?
Yeah, hopelessly incorrigible. Well, that's not something I would hold against him. I don't know. You name some. Go ahead.
I don't know. Everybody I've talked with seems pretty nice, and doesn't seem to say many things in the way of stupidity. But then again, I avoid some of the people who don't have sharp heads, so I don't know. I've talked to David Lynch. He was a very interesting fellow.
Awesome.
I've talked to, Billy Joel and I got into a very public discussion about the artistic integrity of his work, and that was, I got to give him props, even though he said fuck you to me.
That's a good thing. It means that they're out there, that they're willing to engage, that it's not all gone over by a publicist or whatever. So I give him credit for that. I wish he would, stop the substance abuse, but that's another issue. It's not really a celebutard trait. It may be on some of them, but...
But I guess if we were to essentially remove the publicity machine away from this, do you think then that maybe the celebrities who have their words filtered through the media might actually speak more intelligibly? Maybe they're being media trained. Maybe they are being told by publicists, speak in this particular manner, because sometimes when you interview actors, particularly at a junket, you have this situation in which they're not going to use their brains, unless, of course, they're being paid money to appear on a talk show, in which that you get the more, I suppose, plus version of who that particular celebrity is. So I'm wondering if it's, again, not so much the celebrity as it is this inveterate publicity machine, which you and I think, in our respective work, both have to combat.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess you could point to anybody from old Hollywood. They knew to keep their mouths shut. They knew to stick to what they did best. If they had political leanings, you didn't know about it. And I think that was the way to go. Because we're paying them to see their movies, to buy their record albums, CDs, iPods, whatever. It's not downloads. It's not. It's changed so drastically. And Hollywood is really alienating a great deal of people like me, who'd like to think for ourselves.
Yeah. So essentially, if politics were removed entirely from the equation, that you wouldn't be so I suppose vituperative as you often are in your particular columns.
Hey, they're giving me a lot to do. I mean, I would barely have a job if it wasn't for all these, or I wouldn't have a book, that's for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, dwelling on this though, I mean, it seems to me if you're, as I suspect you are, calling for this more virtuous system, it seems to me that in a kind of perverse way, you're almost feeding into the same media system that you are essentially, both of us are essentially bemoaning here.
Okay, well, you know, we've just spent half an hour talking about it, so there is some interest of, you know, people really, really care what their celebrities think, and I'm just saying, look at it, you know, from both sides, look at what they're saying.
But even when you write, for example, the infamous Heath Ledger column, I mean, you wrote, "There is nothing noble or beautiful about the so-called accidental death of Heath Ledger, a man with everything to live for, a beautiful daughter, a blossoming career, and a Victoria's Secret catalog full of willing babes." I mean, did you know him? I mean, were you acquainted with him even? I mean, we don't know what Heath Ledger was living. We don't know how tormented his particular life is. And what? And anyone who's going to go ahead and commit suicide like that, I think it's really a tragic thing.
Well, what I do know is that there was a lot of video that was suppressed in his life. I watched an interview he did with a local TV station here in which he was clearly, I mean, he was drinking bottles of wine at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He was scratching. He was nodding off. He was a junkie. They suppressed that because it wasn't feeding into his publicity machine. He was promoting Dark Knight, or maybe he was promoting his movie before Dark Knight. Now, if they had shown this video on television and said, look at this disaster, I don't know, would he have seen himself? Would somebody close to him have seen what he had become? I don't know, but all I know is we learned about Heath Ledger, we found out who he was only after he was dead, and that's a tragedy.
But even with a snippet like this, do we really know who he was? I mean, I'm not going to go ahead and draw a generalization about you, even though we've only had like a 30-minute conversation here. I'm sure that if I were to talk with you for like, you know, say 10 or 15 hours or something, I might have a better sense of who you are. And not only that, but I'm also not going to go ahead and pass judgment based off of a snippet view of you, because...
Well, you're saying snippet. I'm talking about an entire press tour that was completely suppressed. I after that snippet finally aired on television, I spoke to my critic who said, oh yeah, he was a disaster, and they had stories about him. So a lot of people knew that he was in pain, that he was suffering, and the man was, what, 26 years old at
28,
the time?
I think, yeah.
No, when he died, he was 28.
Oh, 26,
I think
yeah.
During this tour, he was 26 years old. A person who's 26 does not behave that way. And so that's where the media, the protection, the publicist protection of people does not do them any favors.
But when you write a statement like, here's a guy who has everything to live for, well, again, we don't know. I mean, if you and I are subjected to this public scrutiny, I'm pretty sure we would try to figure out a crazy way to deal with it. That's a really extraordinary thing to grant anybody.
It's extreme. Yeah. What the way he was living at 26 years old, he was really asking for help. Unless you're suggesting that he really wanted to die, in which case, who am I to judge? But I don't believe so. I mean, the death was ruled accidental.
I mean, I never knew the man, of course, and neither did you, but I mean, the point is that we were not inside that particular bubble, so therefore, why should we judge based off of this peripheral view? I mean, it seems
and
to me...
And the cover-up is continuing. I mean, which one of the Olsen twins, he was in, had called her bodyguards before they called the police. I mean, why does Heath Ledger get that kind of treatment even after his death? I mean, look, it's very sad. It's my column. It's not in the book. I find it very sad. But I really think that the control that they exert over their career is not doing them any favors, at least not in this case.
But if you find it very sad, and when you write something like this guy had everything to live for, why not put some of that sadness into the column too?
Yeah, the sadness was all there. Don't you think that it was also selfishness? I mean, he left a child fatherless. But don't you think that somebody who has money, fame, who's seen out every night with a different lady, don't you think? Maybe he wasn't enjoying it. I mean, I suppose you could argue that.
Well, there's one key word you're missing, and that has nothing to do with money or fame, and that's happiness. You know, ultimately, maybe Heath Ledger wasn't
happy. Happiness? What is happiness? I mean, that's intangible. Either you are or you're not. I mean, but...
Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm perfectly happy.
Why not more happiness in some of these columns, you know? Why not? Just a little bit of, like, you know, billions from time to time. Like, you know, the sadness.
Plenty of
that.
The ones that attract all the attention are the ones that where I'm slamming somebody. I can't help that. That's the readership. When I write a perfectly happy column, nobody pays any, or not too many people. My hardcore fans do, but somebody like you will only pays attention when you find a negative trend. Now, I really think that column was very interesting because it got picked up all over the world. Of course, the Heath Ledger fans told me that I was evil. But there were a lot of people who said, thank God, somebody is taking the veil off. Somebody is not paying attention to what he wanted in the paper and telling the truth. And that's what I got a lot of, too.
But if you're giving into the readership, too, with these slams, I mean, again, one might also...
Some slam and some don't. But you're only referring to the slams, so that means that's what you're paying attention to. So that's what attracts you, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know you, so I don't know what attracts you. But I'm assuming that's because I've written plenty of happy columns. So it's unfair to say that none of them are happy.
All right. So what are five positive things that you can say about the entertainment industry? Just five.
About the entertainment industry?
Celebrities, everything you do. Name some of these
columns. I love the movies. I am the biggest movie freak. I mean, Slumdog Millionaire. It was delightful. It had an edge too, but it was just delightful. I loved it. I've loved other movies, not this year so much, but I wasn't crazy about Benjamin Button, but I'm not a film critic. I'd like to be a film critic because I really like films, but that's the positive thing is that movies make me happy when they're good, when I like them.
Okay. Well, Andrea, thanks so much for taking the time. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Okay.
All right.